Hello and welcome to BIX is Alive, the radio program in cyberspace dedicated to the preservation and dissemination of the musical legacy of BIX Beiderbecke, the jazz genius from Davenport, Iowa. I am Albert Haim and this is WBIX, the virtual radio station on demand of the BIXography website. In the BIX is Alive program, I will play recordings and talk about the music and the life of BIX Beiderbecke. I will also play recordings by other musicians, past and present, who play in a style influenced and or reminiscent of BIX's unique approach to music. In the programs, I will feature various segments. In some instances, I will have a battle of the bands. On other occasions, I will focus on one particular musician or a theme as the centerpiece of the program. At other times, I will simply play recordings that I enjoy. Through several piles of books and magazines and records that I have around, and I came upon a bunch of very interesting 78s. So I decided that today's program will be devoted to acoustic recordings. Now first, let me read from the New Grove Dictionary of Jazz a little bit of information about acoustic recordings versus electric recordings. For acoustic recordings, it says the acoustical era, 1877-1925. That's almost 50 years. Okay, A, cylinders and discs. The earliest method of sound recordings are described as acoustical and employ only mechanical means for both recording and playback. The sounds to be preserved are directed into a large horn, which at its tapered end is connected to a cutting stylus. In response to the vibrations of air in the horn, the stylus cuts a spiral groove on the thick wax coating of a cylinder or disc, rotated steadily by means of a crank. The cutting process creates variations in the groove analogous to the varying frequency and amplitude of the vibrations. The stylus moves up and down in hill and dale or vertical cut recording and from side to side in lateral cut recordings. Okay, now for the electrical recordings, let me see if I can find that here. The electrical recording era, 1925-1947. That's a little over 25 years, about half of what the acoustical era was. In electrical recording, the sounds to be preserved are gathered by a transducer, a microphone, and the vibrations converted into an analogously varying electrical signal, which is amplified and applied to another transducer, a stylus, which cuts a spiral groove in a waxed or later lacquered disc. The deviations of the incised groove from its regular path correspond to the variations in the electrical signal. In playback, the process is reversed, the signal being converted to a phonograph cartridge, an amplifier, and a loudspeaker into sound. The term electrical recording is usually used in contradistinction to acoustical recording, the preceding era, and magnetic tape recording and microgroove recording in the succeeding era. Okay. Picked up an interesting comment by Nat Shilkret. He wrote in May 1927 about difficulties in recording tenor voices. And this is from Tom Grassick's book, Popular American Recording Pioneers, 1895-1925. The tenor voice gave us plenty of grief for a while. At first, they sounded rather thick, like baritones. At times, hollow. But all voices finally were conquered. I'm sure there must have been a lot of technical difficulties associated in the transition from acoustical to electric. But anyway, we are going to do all acoustical recordings today. Let's get started with the music. The first recording in this program will be by Eddie Davis and his orchestra. And the two sides of the record that I want to play are Lonesome Mama Blues on one side, that's side B, and Hot Lips, that's side A. They were recorded in New York in September of 1922, and the only information that Brian Rust in the dance band discography provides is Eddie Davis, violin and director, two trumpets, a trombone, Gene Fosdick, and another alto sax, bass sax, Mike Markell on piano, a banjo, and drums. This is a Grey Gull recording. It's number 1120. I think I had them reversed. Side A is Hot Lips, and side B is Lonesome Mama Blues. The composers for Hot Lips are listed as Bossy, Lange, and Davis, but it turns out, of course, Bossy is Henry Bossy of Paul Whiteman fame, but the Davis is not Eddie Davis, the leader in this recording, but someone named Lou Davis. Okay, so let's listen then to Eddie Davis from a Grey Gull 78. In the year 1922. Thank you. I must apologize for the poor sound of these records. Of course, these are old records, but also I got them for practically nothing in various garage sales at various times. Now, the Eddie Davis version of Hot Lips is clearly inspired by that of Paul Whiteman recorded a few months earlier. However, the trumpet solo in Eddie Davis's version of the tune Hot Lips is quite different from that of Henry Bussey. What I want to do is just play from the Whiteman recording of 1922 Bussey's solo, so it can be compared directly with the solo in Eddie Davis's recording. So here is Henry Bussey playing his solo of his own composition, Hot Lips, in 1922 with Paul Whiteman. It was customary for the recording studios, the big ones anyway, to have their own bands. Victor had its own bands. OK, for example, had the OK Dance Orchestra. There was also a group, I believe, called the OK Syncopators, which was Harry Reeser. And Columbia had its Colombians. So I want to play a couple of sides by the Colombians. These are the first recordings ever made by the Colombians. August 23rd, 1921, Say It With Music. And this is followed by Just Like a Rainbow, that's recorded on September 12, 1921. In between, on August 26, the Colombians recorded Sweet Lady. But the coupling here is Say It With Music, Columbia 83472, and Just Like a Rainbow, Columbia 83472. So let's then listen to the first recordings by the Colombians, which consists of two trumpets, a trombone, tenor sax, violin, piano, banjo, brass, bass, and drums. The personnel is unknown, and Brian Ross tells us probably differs somewhat from date to date. A studio band. So, the Colombians in 1922. Thank you. there is a certain feeling of melancholy, a sense of wistfulness, I believe, at least to my ears and to my sensitivity, in these last two recordings. Okay, so far I have played dance bands. Now I want to play one of the earliest jazz bands. These are the original Memphis Five. And first I want to read from the dictionary, the New Grove Dictionary of Music, a little bit of information about the original Memphis Five. And I read, Dixieland Quintet. His formation in 1917 is credited variously to the trumpeter Phil Napoleon, who became its leader, and the pianist Frank Signorelli. The other regular members of the group were the clarinetist Jimmy Lytell, 1922-25, the drummer Jack Roth, and one or other of the trombonists Miff Maul and Charlie Pannelli. Numerous other players recorded with it occasionally, including many of the best session and dance band musicians of the period. Between 1921 and 1931, it made hundreds of recordings for almost every label in the USA and also regularly appeared as at the Balconades, a club on Broadway. The repertory of the original Memphis Five included much contemporary popular music, but consisted mainly of New Orleans and Dixieland standards, blues, and original pieces. The group's performance routine was fairly inflexible. Pieces were made up of opening and closing ensemble choruses and a series of solos for the members of the front line and sometimes the piano. The soloists played with energy and power, though their style has something of the jerkiness of ragtime. Lytell's solos are lyrical, making expressive use of the chalumeau register, while Maul plays ruggedly but with splendid control and melodic flair. Napoleon, often criticized for a preoccupation with technique, gives a firm lead. On the early recordings, made before the development of electric techniques in 1925, the drums were often silenced and the quintet had to rely on the piano alone for rhythm support, thereby forfeiting some depth and immediacy. In the 1940s and 50s, the name Original Memphis Five was used again by both Napoleon and Signorelli for occasional performances and recordings. Okay, now, let me see. The two sides that I want to play are side A of Pathé Actuel 020855. It's He May Be Your Man, But He Comes to See Me Sometimes. And side B is Stop Your Kidding. Now let me get Rost's jazz discography. And the discographical information is that the members of the band were Phil Napoleon, Miff Maul on Phil Napoleon on trumpet, Miff Maul on trombone, Jimmy Lytell on clarinet, Loring McMurray on alto, tenor sax, Frank Signorelli on piano, and Jack Roth on drums. That's not a quintet, that's a sextet. Anyway. And the two recordings, Stop Your Kidding, and He May Be Your Man, But He Comes to See Me Sometimes, were recorded on October 19, 1922. All right, so let's listen then to the original Memphis Five, one of the earliest jazz bands, 1922. Thank you. The next two recordings that I want to play are by Ray Miller and his Black and White Melody Boys. This is Columbia A3519. The tunes were recorded on November 18, 1921. And they are Weep No More, My Mammy, and The Chic. The composition of the band, according to Brian Rust, is Earl Oliver and another trumpet, Tom Brown on trombone, Jim Welton and Bernard Daly on clarinet, alto sax, Phil Sax on clarinet, tenor sax, violin, Mike Syring on violin, Billy Fazioli on piano, Gus Lazaro on banjo, Louis Epstein on brass bass, bass saxophone, and drums. And then, in parentheses, Brian Ross writes, probably not Ray Miller, but the label on the recording certainly says Ray Miller. I don't know what to make of that remark by Brian Rust. A little something about Ray Miller. Not much is known. There is no real biographical information about him, no birth date, no death date. Maybe I should look him up in the Social Security Death Index, but I'm afraid the Ray Miller is probably such a common name that there may be thousands of Ray Millers in that index. Anyway, he had a very popular and excellent hot band in the 1920s and included several excellent musicians there. Among them, Frankie Trumbauer and Miff Maul in the mid-30s, early mid-30s, in the late, early mid-20s. In the late 20s, he had Muggsie Spanier, and of course, Ray Miller, there is the director, the leader of the band that recorded Cradle of Love, a side that has a lot of interest because it has been suggested that it may be a lost Bix Beiderbecke site. Well, let's then listen to Ray Miller in 1921. Thank you. go on and play the last two selections in this set of acoustical recordings. This is from Nora Bays. It's Columbia 83311. One side, the Broadway Blues, was recorded on August 27, 1920. The other side, Singing the Blues, was recorded on August 26, 1920. This is probably one of the earliest recordings of this tune, Singing the Blues, of course famous because of the fantastic recording by Bix and Tram in 1927. Let me read to you what Brian Ross tells us about Nora Bays in his entertainment discography. She's born in 1880, made huge success in first decade of the century with two British numbers with Americanized lyrics, Come Along, My Mandy, and Has Anybody Here Seen Kelly, in the Jolly Bachelors Broadway Theater, January 6, 1910, and Harry von Tilzer from a stage box in Percy Williams Orpheum Theater in Brooklyn in 1902 helped her plug his Down Here, the Wurzburger Flows. When she sang it in London, it flopped. Nora Bays and her husband Jack Northworth composed and sang Shine On, Harvest Moon with great success in Follies of 1908, and it has never lost its popularity. She scored again in 1917 with George M. Cohan, War Song Over There, and in 1920 she introduced another great success to New York and London, Japanese Sandman. She was one of the many stars that opened Lou Fields Music Hall, later known as the 44th Street Theater, and was very popular with London audiences in the 20s. Nora Bays died March 19, 1928, exactly 3 years to the day before I was born. Well, anyway, so let's then listen to Nora Bays in 1920, and in particular, let's listen carefully to the second side, the Singing the Blues.
Get into bed, please. and then the whole darn day starts over again. Things went so phenomenal, things went beautiful. 1 year up and down Broadway will give you the blues. When you're proud and lost, you're still alive. Take a plane and go somewhere and stay in your room.